blood and thunder and going in for tackles that you wouldn't normally go in for.
I try and like want to go in, like my wife's English, the kids are having, but I just can't.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast and download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetsetGo. Quick start car insurance that's ready when you are. Sort your policy anytime online at GetsetGo.ie.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now, it's that time of the rugby season where we see a lot of players departing the Irish provincial system. A lot of those players into their mid and late 30s, retiring after great and long careers. Other guys leaving because they haven't been able to get the chance or haven't been able to get offered a new contract. But for my next guest, it's probably a tougher one because at the age of just 25, Stephen Fitzgerald was forced to retire after a very lengthy battle with knee injuries dating back to the start of 2020. But I'm delighted to say Stephen's joined us this afternoon to chat through things. Stephen, how are you? I know there was a tough couple of lines to have to intro you with. I imagine a very, very tough period for yourself. But look, you're smiling there now. I know talking to you in advance, you've kind of been dealing with it for the last couple of months. And is it something that you've started to accept now and has become normal for you?
Yeah, I suppose with actually kind of getting it out there and everything, it actually did make it a bit easier to accept the fact that everybody kind of knew. I suppose myself, I probably knew from, say, the end of February after I had my third surgery on my knee. I was just like, I suppose I kind of started to accept actually the thoughts that I was having, that it was a possibility. And yeah, like then I had a few kind of rough couple of weeks, I suppose, actually coming to terms with it and dealing with it. But I suppose since I actually just accepted it, yeah, it's made it a lot easier.
So with that last surgery, was that a case of pretty soon after the surgery, they were able to tell what we were going in there to try and fix, we just weren't really able to repair?
I actually think like my knee still doesn't feel great at the moment now, but I do like the surgeon, everything is hopeful that says somewhere down the line, like I will be pain free and everything. But I suppose after the last surgery, more so from my own point of view, I was just, I suppose, trying to weigh up the, like, obviously I always wanted to be a professional rugby player and I tried to plan that as long as I could. But then I suppose after that third surgery, when I woke up, I was just like, oh, what's the cost that I'm kind of putting on my body? And then I suppose my mental space as well, because it was a very hard time. And then I suppose I probably knew, I said 2 or 3 weeks after when I was, because obviously after surgery, you're pretty much lying down on a couch just thinking. And then I suppose a couple of weeks after, I just made the decision, yeah.
So it wasn't a case of, I was kind of going to ask that later on as well, that is it something that slowly dawns on you over a period of time that this is something that's going to have to be done? Or I was wondering, was it a case of you're doing everything you can to get back and you go into the, you go into the surgeon to meet back up with him for a chat and he delivers the news to you that no, this isn't working, you're gonna have to pack it in? It was the former, those that you kind of realize
it
over.
It was probably, yeah, I'd say. So after I had my second surgery, I suppose the, like before that, say the 8 or 9 months before that, like obviously when I first done it, the thought of, oh, if this doesn't work out great was probably in my head. But I suppose once I got the surgery done and cracked down my rehab, like the thought of retiring for say the first 9 months wasn't in my thought process at all, because everything was going well and everything's like, I didn't really have any major hiccups. But I suppose it was after I had that second surgery, I did start to get thoughts more frequently. And I remember at the time I'd like get so angry with myself for even thinking that way. I was just almost like, geez, why are you being soft, like thinking like this? I was like, and tried to get it out of my head, but I remember, stop thinking like that, you know, like it's just so negative, like just like you'll be fine. But I remember looking back in that time now, I actually wish I probably accepted the thoughts at the time, because it would have just made it a lot easier and everything, whereas I was just getting so angry at myself for having the thoughts. And then yeah, I suppose, sorry to answer your question, that it was probably over a few weeks. So I had that surgery in November, I think, and then from November until January, the thoughts were probably becoming more frequent, the fact that I suppose it wasn't getting as good as I thought. And then I remember once I just went out running, I think it was around January. It was actually the day we played Munster up in the sports ground. And I remember I just ran before it. And then I remember just on a few runs, I was just like, Jesus, like this just feels terrible. And I shouldn't have felt that bad. Like it was only like, say, gone 50%. And then the next day it was the worst my knee has felt in the 18 months. Like I remember I could barely even bend it. It was so swollen, so stiff. And then, I had to go in for the third one.
I might go right back to the start to get all of this. Like September 2015, Munster away to the Ospreys. You're 19 years old. You come off the bench, make your debut, you score a try. Like, I imagine that's the day where you're absolutely on top of the world. You'd be 100% forgiven for thinking future Irish international, British and Irish lines probably in 2021, whatever, or down the line. Mm-hmm. Like, all these thoughts are probably going through your head. I'd love to just get an idea of what that feels like for a 19-year-old to be coming on.
I actually started that first match.
You started it? All right. Even better. Even better. But, like, what was that like?
I suppose, obviously, like, say, I went into the academy and everything like that, and then I suppose the thoughts when I knew things were going well was probably actually the year before playing for the Ireland under-20s. Thankfully, I had a successful enough time playing with them and scored a few tries. And then, like, I wish looking back now that I didn't kind of believe all the hype that there was around me. But, like, when you're a young fella, it's kind of hard not to. Like, I remember there was times when, like, I'd just be like flicking through Instagram or Twitter or something, and I saw one, I don't know who it was, had an article up about me being like, oh, like this is the next best thing since Keith Earls and potentially could be better. And like, I remember, like, at, like, growing up, like, Earlsy was like the man around Limerick, like, you know, and everybody wanted to be him. And I remember, I think I was 18 or 19 at the time, and I'm just like, geez, like, somebody's comparing me to Keith Earls, like, you know. And like, I wish, I suppose, I didn't really believe that. But, and then, yeah, I suppose when I made my debut, it was unbelievable. Like, I'll never forget it. Like, we obviously won the match. I think Keith's got a kick in the last play of the game to win it. And then I remember, like, we all went out after, and I remember being like, Jesus, like, this is the absolute life. Like, you know, I can't get any better than this. Like, you know, I just said, scoring on my debut, like, getting texts and calls from literally anyone who had ever talked to me. And yeah, I thought I was only going to go up and up after there until my next match.
what was the next one? Did you come crashing back down to earth on that?
Yeah. So obviously I played all right in that match, and then we were playing Scarlets away a few weeks later. And looking back now, I still think that was one of the worst matches I've ever played. I didn't play for a year after that for the senior team.
Would you have been, like you were saying there, you know, when you're 19, you're trying not to believe the hype, but sometimes you might a little bit. Were you a cocky little fella back then, were you?
Like, I wasn't cocky at all. Well, sorry, I'd like to think I wasn't. I'm sure there'll be a few people now who will say otherwise, but, like, I don't think I was. But as I was saying, like, when you're a young fella and you see all this stuff being read about you, and, like, comments everywhere, and, like, you hear chats of, say, like, I remember just coaches talking about me once in Munster, and then, yeah, it's hard not to kind of get sucked into it. And I suppose that's what the best players do. They just don't really, either they don't believe it or they just black it out. But as I was saying, I don't think there'd be many of those people that at such a young age being able to do that, because you come from, like, say, playing for your school or your club, where, like, you're only kind of known around, say, Limerick, if you are even known or whatever. And then, as you say, you go on and you play a few good matches for the Ireland under-20s, and you think you're the big man then.
who would have been in your peer group then, in terms of schools rugby coming through the age system at Ireland, the 19s, 20s, those kind of things?
Well, for Irish under-20s, we actually had, like, I think we were looking back now. I think we finished 8th in the World Cup, but like there's so many lads that have gone on to play professional rugby. Like I think the back line alone, we had Nick McCarthy, there was Ross and Joey at 10, then there was Sammy Arnold 12, Gary 13. I was one wing, but I didn't even start our first match. There was like Kieran Gaffney at the time, and then Jack Owens was on the other wing, and Jacob Sockdale started a few matches, and he was on the bench for a few. He was a year out of his age, and then I suppose came true.
Yeah, that was a decent enough stock of players, particularly a solid backline, you'd have to say. Solid backline.
I know, yeah. And then there was loads of forwards as well then who came true, so, yeah.
So, like, through that period, through the under-20s and through the start when you're getting the Munster break around when you're 19 or 20 years old, like that's all going great. And as you said, it probably stalled then. It was another year or so before you played for Munster. Injuries was something that seemed to catch up on you around that time as well.
Yeah.
You were kind of coming out of academy into the senior setup.
I think that was my first year in the academy. And then, if I'm not mistaken, I think my second year, I think, was when Razzie and Jack came in. And I remember I was kind of just like, because obviously, as I said, I played those two matches, say, around September, October, and then didn't play for the rest of the year. So I was obviously pretty down in the dumps because, as I said, that was the first kind of like, I suppose, low period I had since I went in there. Or was it even my third year that Razzie came in? I'm not sure anyway. No, I think it was my second year. And then we had, like, I remember that preseason, the first year they came in, looking back, was still the hardest thing I've ever done. Like, it was so hard because I was still so young and, like, I was a skinny little fella, like, had barely any muscle on me or anything. But I remember some of the drills they used to do in that preseason were so hard. But like anyone else, like, we worked really hard. And then I didn't get picked for the first match for them, but I was on the bench against Cardiff. And at the time, well, I'd like to think that Razzie and Jack liked me, because I said I was a young fella, I worked hard. And like, I know Jack especially was doing a lot of work with me and helping me and stuff. And then the next week I wasn't playing again. And then I went out for Shannon and I actually tore my syndesmosis in my ankle and had to have an operation on that. And I remember, if I didn't have that, I think of, like, Zeebs was injured and then Andrew Conway got concussed. And like, I was the, say, third choice fullback before then. And I remember if I hadn't got injured, like, I would have started something like the next six matches at fullback. And because that's how long the two lads were out, obviously, if I played well or whatever. But obviously, I missed out on that. And at such a young age, if you would have got an opportunity like that, especially when a few of the internationals were away, like, it just brings people on so much. And I always think back to, like, my career as that being one of, like, the biggest opportunities, I suppose, that I missed out on. So then I had surgery on my ankle. And then, unfortunately, like, my ankle was never really right. And then I suppose I just kind of learned to deal with it, which is...
Would injuries have been something, like, you know, I would have played rugby in school and stuff, and there were always lads, a lot of the better players as well, there were some of them that just always had injury problems. Were you someone like that, that was constantly picking up little bits like that, or was it really until those big injuries arrived that it started?
Yeah, like, I actually never really, like, picked up, say, like, hamstring strains or quad strains or anything like that. Like, thankfully, touch wood, I've only had one concussion. It was only kind of the big one, to say, like, when I first saw my syndesmosis, like, my ankle was just always at me, like, but as I said, I was able to kind of train and play with it, which is, as I said, what you kind of have to do. But I was lucky, and I suppose that I never really picked up too many small knocks. It was always, like, say, my ankle, or unfortunately my knee in the last years.
Yeah. And then, so by the end of 2020, the move to Connacht comes about. Mm. Is that something you kind of sought out yourself? Were you ready to move on from Munster at that point? Or was it just an opportunity where they needed bodies and they came calling and you just went with it?
Yeah, I suppose it was probably the first. I remember, say, the end of the year before in Munster, I'd actually started to play a bit. I think I went on a tour to South Africa, and then I played against Ulster, and I started a few matches, and like I was playing really well. And I remember at the time being like, I wish there was like four more months left in this season, because I knew that Zeeves was moving on. And then I was finally starting to get a lot of opportunities, and then I was actually playing well. And I remember like when the season finished, I was just like, why is this happening? Like you go through all the months where you don't play, and then you start playing, and then the season finishes.
And you're fully fit and you're raring.
Finally like starting to get my chance, not having any niggles, and then actually playing. And then I remember like Zeeds left and then Mike Haley came in, and I suppose I thought I was going to get a lot of opportunities in the following season, and unfortunately that just didn't materialise. And then, yeah, I remember, I think it was Tiernan, Heels, and I think Tiernan, Heels and Neasy were all injured. And then I suppose Connor came and inquired about me. And yeah, at the time I was definitely ready to move on. Like I would have, like when that opportunity came up, like I definitely wanted to leave.
And was your brother Connor at Connacht by that stage, was he?
Yeah, it was funny. So like me and Connor were at Munster when he came into the academy and done a few years there. And then he left, and then Mossy Lawler and Tucky got onto him about going up to the academy in Connacht. So he was up there and he was going well. I think a few weeks before I went up, like he made like his European debut against Sale, and like he played really well in the senior squad already after playing with Munster and not getting any opportunities. And then I was looking at Connor like playing in Europe and everything like that. So then I followed him up the road to try and get some.
The Shannon Mafia looking after each other with Mossy and Colly Tucker as well.
We all stick together.
So, like, and like it seemed to be going quite well for you in those early days. If you look from the end of 2020 when you arrived to the start of 2020 or 2018 to start of 2020 when the injury hit, like you had played 18, 19 games. So regular enough game time and stuff like that.
I remember when I went up to Connacht, and obviously I had gone from like saying having not played a match for the senior team in 3 or 4 months. And then I think I went up. My first day up there was Christmas Eve. And then I remember I played the first match that week against Ulster. And then I think for the rest of the season, like the 10 matches that were left or whatever, I only wasn't picked in one of them. And then I actually started the quarterfinal against Ulster that at the end of the year. So yeah, it went really well. It was mad, I suppose, how quickly a change kind of happened where I felt like I was so far away from the starting team in Munster. And then I went up to Connacht and I started in a quarterfinal.
What does that do for your confidence then by the end of that 2018-19 season, where you've gone from not getting a sniff of any action at the start of the season at one club to changing up, and all of a sudden, more or less week in, week out, you're out in the pitch and you're playing all over again?
It's mad, like, what it does for your confidence. Like, I remember in Munster, like, literally being so low, like, thinking that, like, I was nearly going to be playing every second game after a few matches the year before, and then, like, literally not getting a sniff. I remember, like, I was almost questioning myself, being like, Jesus, am I actually a good player, like, or, like, am I actually able to play rugby? Like, literally feeling like I had no confidence whatsoever because I wasn't playing and I wasn't getting picked or whatever. And then, yeah, I went up to Connacht and then was playing all the time. And to be fair, to Friendly and to Nige, they just installed so much confidence and belief in me that, like, I was just able to go out and actually play how I wanted to and actually express myself.
Connacht do have a reputation, like, in probably in the last 10 years or so, particularly for picking up guys who haven't been getting it good across the other provinces and putting a bit of fire into them. Like, you only have to look at someone like Tom Daly as well, who arrived at Connacht at pretty much the exact same time as you did. And
it was funny, me and Tom were actually talking about that. I think it was last week before the Irish squad was announced. We were just chilling out in his house and we were just chatting with me and him. I think he came the week before me and then I came, and we were just saying how, like, 2 years ago when we came, like, we were both probably, like, being like, oh, if we could just get a contract for next year, like, you know, we'd be happy. And then 2 years later, like, Tom's in the Irish squad, like, you know, and hopefully he'll get a run out there. But it's mad how quickly things can change. Like, as I said, we were like, we'll only be delighted to have been able to stay playing professional rugby, and now he's in the squad.
Yeah. The game where it all changed for you then, the injury, January 2020 against Leinster at the RDS. Might talk about the game itself first, because as I've seen you mention in an interview, like, it was a big occasion for you. Like, yeah. You know, I think you said it was your first time that you were properly picked over Tiernan O'Halloran at fullback.
Yeah, like, I remember, obviously, like, when I was watching Cassell Connacht win the Pro 14, like, the back three were a massive part of that, and, like, Tiernan was unbelievable. Like, he was playing such good rugby, such an attacking threat. And, yeah, I think, so, like, the year before I came up, he was on the Irish tour. I think if they went to one, I'm not sure if it was South Africa or Japan, but he was on that anyway. And then I remember I came up, and obviously Tiernan was the out-and-out fullback up there, and I would like to think that I was a pretty ambitious fella and that I backed myself and everything like that. So I just set myself the goal of trying to get ahead of T as being the starting fullback. And then I played on the wing when he played fullback, but I'd never actually, like, say, started ahead of him, or say, came off the bench for him, but I'd never got picked ahead of him. And then I remember the Leinster match was the first time, yeah, that I'd ever got picked ahead of him. And then that's what I remember. I was just like, it's weird, like, I was just so excited for that match, like, because we were playing against Leinster in a Christmas Interpro up in the RDS, like, the pitch's class out there. And I remember just being like, just don't let this, like, opportunity kind of pass you by, like, just go out and enjoy it. Like, this is what you set yourself, this goal of, for like a year and a half, and you finally achieved it. Now just go out and enjoy it, like, express yourself. And little did I know that would be the ending of my career.
Yeah, look, it's awful. The injury itself, then, yeah. Is it all a bit of a blur?
I remember it. I think Luke McGrath just kicked the ball, and he actually kicked it a bit long, so I kind of caught it pretty easily. And then I remember I was running back, and initially I was running down towards, like, forward and a back, but then I actually saw, like, to the left of me, there was kind of, like, two forwards. So, like, when you're a back three player and, like, you're counter-attacking, like, that's an opportunity to kind of take them on. And then I remember I just stepped off my right foot, and, like, no contact whatsoever. I just stepped. And then I remember it was, like, the thing they always say, it was almost like my studs done, like, too good of a job, that they, like, planted in the ground too good. Because when I tried to turn off then, like, my knee just, like, buckled in, and, like, I felt loads of cracks and pops, but, like, it wasn't anything bad or anything like that. I remember initially for, say, the first 20 or 30 seconds just being really, really uncomfortable, but I felt like I could have played on, like, I walked off the pitch and everything. And, yeah, like, the funny thing about that was that Connor actually got injured in that match as well, and, like, he hurt his ankle, but he only, like, hurt a bit of, like, scar tissue, which, like, is nothing. But he got stretchered off the pitch and had to get a green whistle and everything, and he was available to play next week, and I walked off the pitch then and my career is over.
Oh, jeez. God almighty.
Tough enough, I think.
Yeah. I imagine there's a bit of a wait, obviously, while you're waiting to get back scan results to tell you exactly, you know, this is an ACL injury. What's that wait like?
It was weird because, like, I went in and there was two physios on, Garrett Coughlin and Emma. And Emma was the one who actually brought me into the dressing room to look after me. And she, like, put me in the brace and was, like, doing all the tests. And she was doing the tests, and like, I'd be the type of person that I just want to know straight away, like, you know, what's the story? And she was just like, oh, she was like, we'll have to wait and get the scans. And I was like, look, Emma, it's just like, in your opinion, like, you know what it is. And she's just like, I'd be really worried about the ACL. And then I remember I was just like, oh, because, like, it's weird, you hear of all these people getting, like, these massive injuries like that, and, like, they're out for so long, but, like, I just never thought I'd get, like, something massive like that, you know, you just never feel like it's going to happen to you. And then I remember when she told me that, I was just like, oh my God, like, I was just like, how have I torn my ACL? I was like, how has this happened to me? So then I kind of knew, I suppose I kind of had in my head that I was just like, oh, okay, like, it's the ACL. And then I got the results that evening, and Chopper Dave Hanley, he actually rang me and told me. And then I suppose when you actually get told the news that it actually is your ACL, it's way harder than actually known, because obviously I was like, oh yeah, it's the ACL, but I suppose you still always have that 1% where you're just like, oh, hopefully it was just something else. But yeah, it was probably one of the hardest things that I've ever had to hear when they told me it was the ACL.
Yeah, I can imagine so. In terms of the rehab, I know you said at the start that like once you kind of got into the rehab and you're into the day-to-day process of it, you're generally upbeat because, you know, you're thinking positively, like, you know, okay, this is the benchmark. I'm going to try get back by this point in time and stuff. How close did you ever come to actually making it back, do you think? How close did you get to,
I came really close, which was a really frustrating thing. Like, I actually got back team training around the end of October for 2 weeks, and like, I was going really well. Like, I was training really well. I actually remember, I think Friendly Annoyed actually asked, could I play a match one weekend once? Because, like, I looked like normal, like, is the best way that I can describe it. Like, I didn't, like, I was stepping off my knee, like, everything felt fine, don't get me wrong. Now, I was absolutely blown out my hole. I felt so unfit when I actually got out training. But yeah, because I kind of hate saying this, but like, the lockdown kind of came at the perfect time for me, because when you're injured, like, it's actually really hard to be in and around, say, the training center where everybody trains, because you're just so far away from the lads. And like, whenever they have a big win or anything like that happens, don't get me wrong, you're delighted for them, but it just makes you feel so much away from them because you're just not involved in it at all.
Yeah, you're part of the team, but you're not.
Because like, there'd be weeks where I could go without, say, seeing someone or chatting to someone. And then when you do come in every day, someone's like, oh, how's the knee? How's it going? And don't get me wrong, it's really nice of people to ask, but it's just another thing that kind of reminds you, oh yeah, I'm injured. And then, so I remember that the lockdown actually happened, and I came down here to Kilkee with my girlfriend, and like, I was able to take all the equipment that I needed from Connacht, and because she's actually a sprinter as well. So like, we were training together, and like, I loved being down here, because I actually say I ended up training way harder here than I would have in Connacht, because like, when I was down here, I was just like, all right, I just have one focus, like, just get my knee right. And I kind of trained on my own schedule. And then, yeah, like, when I was down here, it was going really well. And yeah, and then obviously, as I said, I got back training. And then for months, I've been like, oh, okay, I want to be back for wrestling away or wrestling at home. Like, I didn't want to set myself a goal like that, because the one thing that people always said was that there is going to be hiccups, there is going to be stumbling blocks, and you don't want to get deflated every time you get pushed out a week and another week. And like, I didn't have any of them. Like, obviously there was days where like, they're like, okay, we're not going to run today, we're going to run tomorrow, because the knee is just a bit stiff. But they're like, as I said, I never luckily had like hamstring strain or a quad pull. And then I got back training, and then I actually set myself, I think my birthday is around November 13th. So I actually set myself the target of being back for that week. And there was a match on. I was like, geez, that'd be pretty cool now to get back from injury on the week of your birthday. But unfortunately, that didn't happen.
And what was the setback at that point?
It was really weird. So they said I was back training, integrated now into training. And then I think I'd done one full week. So say I was integrating for like 2 or 3 weeks. So say do one session with the team, then do 2 sessions, then do a full week, and then it was my first full week, and I'd done it and like went absolutely perfect. Like, I was doing like, say, extra conditioning top ups after the session to just keep a track on that, and like, was going really well. And then it was literally like, I just came in one day and we were warming up, and I was just like, this just feels a bit weird. Like, it just doesn't feel the way it felt, say, a few weeks ago. And then I remember we were kind of doing this like tackling drill. And then obviously like when you're tackling, you kind of have to squat down and like, I think I was tackling Sam Arnold. He didn't do anything wrong there, just so that he doesn't get to blame or anything. But he, like, I had to, like, he went to my right side, so my right knee, and I kind of had to, like, squat down on that. And then I remember I was just like, Jesus, this feels so bad. Like, it feels horrific. And then I just pulled up, and then I went and got a scan, and then, yeah, I took him for the second surgery.
What's that like to deal with, kind of rehabbing an injury and I suppose further down the line rehabbing it constantly and knowing it's not really right?
Yeah, it was probably the end of like the midway through after that second surgery where it like really hit me hard. And when I got told I had to have the second surgery, like it really hit me hard, because as I said, I was so positive for the first 9 months because like I just knew what I had to do, like, you know, and I knew that I was like, okay, like, my knee is really good. Like, that's the annoying thing whenever I think back, like, my ACL has been perfect. Like, I haven't had one problem, like, with the ACL repair, or they get it from your patella graft. Like, that's the thing that was being fixed, yet that's been perfect. But then, yeah, like, I suppose after the second surgery, so I basically just had, like, a clean out done there. Because they didn't want, because I had this thing over with cartilage, but they didn't want to do that because that if I got that done, it would have been like a 7 month return. So I was just like, oh, I'd like to go and do the clean out and see if that works. And then, yeah, I was rehabbing that, and then that was still even kind of going fine. Like, we thought it had all healed up. Like, it was still a bit sore and a bit painful, but we were just kind of hoping that went away. And then, like, done all the running drills, all the speed drills to kind of prep you for runs, and then that even went okay. And then I actually done 2 runs, excuse me, and they went perfect. But then there was just one day where I was just doing a small bit of volume, and then as I said, I could feel that my knee just felt horrendous doing that.
And is that the day it really kind of hits that, all right, yeah, this isn't working?
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, I remember it was after the lads had another big win. I actually live with, say, Paul Boyle and Connor. And I think I knew my knee was bad then. Like, that was a few weeks after. And a week or two after that Munster match I was talking about. And I knew my knee was really bad. But Connor and Boyle both went out and played. And as I said, I was living with them, and like, they both played really well, and like, they came home and like, they were obviously buzzing, and I remember being like, oh my god, it's just like I feel like I'm never going to experience that again. And then I just remember, obviously I was delighted for them, but from a personal point of view, I remember being like, Jesus, this is the hardest thing ever now, being in the room with them, because I just feel like I'm not going to experience this ever again.
When the decision did arrive, what was that like? Putting it in writing, putting it firmly down in concrete. This is it. No going back.
It was really hard. Like, it was so hard. To be honest, I don't think I would have been able to get through it. Obviously, with my family, but especially my girlfriend. Like, there is a lot of days now where like. I was just being a bit of a, I don't know, it's just bad to say now and this live, but like, because I'd just be like, it would just be so hard for me, like, trying to actually make the decision, and then like, she's just, I suppose, just be there for me, and obviously she's the person I'm probably the closest with too, so like, obviously, like, there's times where I was just taking my frustrations out, like, and just, I suppose, giving out about everything. I remember at the time I almost felt like by retiring that I was taking the easy option. And obviously I know looking back now I'm not. And like, I felt like I was, I suppose, letting everybody down actually retiring, because I know my parents and everything get so much from us playing and like playing well. And I just remember, yeah, just at the time it was so hard to actually accept it. Like, it probably took me the bones of 2 months to actually accept it. Like, I'd wake up in the middle of the evening, say for like 4 weeks, I was waking up in the middle of the evening, like, thinking, what am I doing? Or being like, oh, okay, I'm going to retire. Then I'd wake up the next day and be like, what am I doing retiring? Like, how am I giving up? And then I changed my mind again. And it was literally back and forth like that for ages. And yeah, I suppose then, as I said, after the third surgery, I was just like, I just can't do this anymore. And then I suppose it was when I actually started to do a bit of rehab on my knee and saw that it unfortunately wasn't that great. That, like, looking back in it now, it was an easy decision to make because of the damage I was doing and everything, but I'll still always regret it and, like, have massive regrets about it. Yeah,
absolutely, and totally understandable as well. It, like, as you say there, it was February when the third operation happened,
and February. Time,
it was the end of May, pretty much, when you publicly announced it.
Yeah.
What was that time like before everyone knew about it? Like, I presume you told the close friends and family and the team, obviously.
Yeah. So obviously, as I said, I told all my close friends, family, girlfriend, or whatever. Like, I remember it was literally, I was just sitting down one day at home. And then I was like, I think I was with my girlfriend, and I was like, oh, I think I'm going to retire. And she was just like, what? She was just like, no, you don't. And, like, it was my girlfriend and my dad who actually found it the hardest, like, because obviously they know how much rugby means to me and everything. And they'd keep being like, oh, I just don't think you're done. Like, I just don't think this is the end. I just don't think it can end this way. And, like, I remember one day I literally had to be like about them, like, almost give out to them, be like, look, like, I've came to terms with it, like, I'm not happy about it, but I'm okay with it, like, you know. And I was just like, please, I was just like, can you just accept it for me? I was just like, because it's actually really hard, like, you know, say, talking to you about it sometimes, because they just wanted what was best for me. And I completely, like, understand it now. I completely get where they were coming from. Like, they just wanted me to keep living my dream and to say fulfill all the goals that I had. So yeah, and then obviously we had that conversation and I think they accepted it then. But yeah, it was really hard. Like, that was probably the hardest time, as I said, making the decision, because as I said, I told a lot of my really close friends and then family, girlfriend, her family, and then obviously I started to tell a few of the Connacht lads, and then say they might have heard off one or two people, and then I just announced it to the whole squad one meeting, because I just had to, because I was just like, I just want everybody to know, because there was about a 2-week period there between me having made the decision and when I told the whole squad, that, say, like, I'd go in, have 2 or 3 conversations with people and being like, oh, I heard, like, the bad news or whatever. And then I was having, like, 3 of those conversations a day, and it was, like, so hard because, like, I was still, I hadn't accepted it at the time, so I was still finding it so hard to deal with. And then having all the conversations on top of it was so hard because I was almost trying to forget about it while coming to terms with it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Was there a bit of a release in you, kind of, once you actually made it public and everyone knew and you didn't have to stop carrying around this little secret that, look, it's
100%.
Out there, and like releasing a pressure valve?
Like, in a selfish way, like, I was so happy when it did get released, because everybody knew now. Like, nobody was like, say, as I was saying, I felt like whenever I met, say, like, some of my friends from Limerick, or say family friends, that, like, they either would say it to me and that would, like, make me have another long conversation about it and then would kind of get me a bit upset or whatever, or I could tell that they wanted to ask me how my knee was but they were almost afraid to because they didn't want to upset me or whatever. So that was when it actually got out and, like, everybody actually knew. Like, that thing, I was getting loads of texts being like, oh, I hope you're okay, I hope you're going, like, things aren't too bad. But, like, when it actually got released in May, like, I was, like, me and my brother always say, like, we were just so done with the actual retirement because, like, we had dealt with it for, like, say, the 3 months before and had the tears and, like, the long chats and everything, that, like, by the time it actually came out in May, we were just, like, happy that I almost feel like that was the moving on point, everybody known.
How did Conor take it when he would have heard the news? Because I imagine now, like, he's in a position where I'd say he's probably not going to take anything for granted now, having seen what, you know, his older brother has gone through over the last couple of years. That, and I imagine you're certainly not going to let him slack off anytime soon. If you see him not putting in too much of an effort or something like that with training, remind him of what he has.
Yeah.
You know?
I know Conor was great, to be fair to him. I remember there was one day when, as I said, around the second operation, when I was having the talks or whatever, and I was just at home, and like, he literally just came in and asked me a question, and then I just got really upset and like just had a few tears, and then Conor went out to the kitchen, and both of our girlfriends were out there, and then they both started like having a few tears with Conor. So like, I was in the other sitting room bawling my eyes out, because that was probably the first day where I actually accepted it, because I actually went and had like a really long conversation with Friendly about it, and then I came home, and then, as I said, I probably just, I suppose, let out what I was probably battling up for the last few weeks and months. And then it was hilarious, because I just set off this chain of making everybody cry and everything like that. But yeah, that's the one thing that, like, my advice to anyone, and I actually tried to say it to Cam Daly and Paul Boyle last week when they both got picked for Ireland, I was just like, please just like enjoy this day. Like, that's my one regret, that like I just didn't enjoy the good days more, and I really wish I did, like, say the big wins or like even anything like getting a contract extension or anything like that. Like, I really wish that I just enjoyed them a lot more. So that's the one thing that I'll definitely try and make Conor do from now on, is just enjoy those times as much as he can.
Yeah, it's a nice way to sign things off. Before I leave you go, Stephen, any idea what the future holds for you?
No, I don't really have a clue at the moment. Thankfully, as I said, I have Rugby Players Ireland, and Deirdre Lyons with them is really helping me, and she's doing a lot of work with me. Nearly having a few phone calls with her weekly. She's been amazing with just trying to figure out. Thankfully, I finished off my undergrad in college, so I
was that in?
Business degree, so business, and I majored in accounting and finance. So if anybody out there wants to give me a hand with that, I would say no. But yeah, that was the one thing I said, I didn't want to like rush into any job or doing anything like that, because the one thing that anyone who's retired has always told me is like, just take a few months, because you just want time to just like relax. And thankfully, I don't have a family or anything like that, so I'm in a position where I'm able to do that. I'm not under like money scrutiny or anything. So yeah, I'll take a few months, and then, as I said, Deirdre's working close with me, and I'm very grateful for that. So hopefully, say around September time, I might venture into the big bad world.
Well, Stephen, it's been a pleasure speaking to you, and obviously it would be better if it was under better circumstances, but the very best of luck for everything in the future, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks a million. I appreciate it, Neil. Cheers.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Quick Start Car Insurance that's ready when you are. Sort your policy anytime online at getsetgo.ie.